From the Church of the Nazarene and Mesoamerica Genesis, you're listening to the Worthless Servants Podcast.
Hello, and welcome back to the Worthless Servants Podcast. I'm excited about today's topic, but first I need to introduce some worthless servants that are here. To my left, AJ Fry.
Hey, guys.
And then to his left and across from me, Emily Armstrong.
Hey, everyone.
Freya Galindo as well.
Hi there.
And then to my right, Chelsea Fry.
Fun fact, did you know that Iceland's last McDonald's burger was sold 8 years ago and you can still see it today?
What?
Wait, what? Huh? You can still see the burger that was sold?
Yep.
The person didn't eat it?
Nope. It is stored in a hostel in Iceland, and you can even watch it on a 24/7 live webcam stream.
What is wrong with our society?
What are you watching?
Yeah.
Mold grow?
No.
Well, probably not on a McDonald's hamburger.
Exactly. That's
and it
the
is
point.
Iceland.
That's
it is thing. Iceland.
That's so true. It's preserved.
Cool. A frozen hamburger. A hamburger hostel?
I'm more curious.
A hamburger hostel.
I'm more curious why they ostracized McDonald's, apparently.
I don't know.
Like, they had McDonald's and then decided no more McDonald's.
Because their burgers can live in a hostel for 8 years.
Oh,
yeah.
That's true.
There's that.
Imagine how long it lives in your system.
I probably have McDonald's burgers still in me from kindergarten.
Now we're never getting a sponsor out of
that's our quote.
Let's move on, people.
Okay. All right, these fun facts are going to be awesome.
Or not.
They're going to get us really derailed.
Right. Today's fun fact brought to you by McDonald's.
And the letter
we never go away.
All right, well, there's no easy transition to the topic today. But the topic is based on an article that I wrote, and I do this every year, so I forget which episode it is, but you can look back about a year to the episode when we talked about the observations from the 2017 statistics. And now the topic for today is 10 observations on the Church of the Nazarene's 2018 global statistics. We're a little ways from 2018. But it's given me a little time to read through and to maybe do the hard work so that not everyone has to look through all of those. I think there are 40 pages or something. So, and it's all statistics. And,
my fave.
And so, so I've looked through those and highlighted certain ones, and let's dive right in. I don't know if certain ones grabbed you more than others, but the idea is to talk about these and then to say, where do we move forward? How do we move forward with this being the reality?
I really liked in the article you said that God is calling and the church is ordaining more and more leaders. And that is super cool because if we expect the church to grow in membership, we have to have more leaders. And so that is exciting that we're turning out more leaders. And on top of that, AJ and I are getting ordained this year.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Congratulations.
That's awesome. Like, we still don't know.
they could
decline us.
I mean,
when
yes.
we get
after they meet
this
you for real,
true.
Yeah. Probably you will be, yeah.
Decline?
Thanks for the encouragement.
So if I tell my fun facts during our interview.
So the exact statistics are that 21% more elders and 48% more deacons have been ordained since 2008. That's just in the last 10 years. That's pretty cool. I mean, God continues to call men and women to his service and to be pastors, to be missionaries, to be evangelists. It's really, really neat.
Yeah, I kind of wonder if that number, I would like to see, and Scott, maybe since you read through all of those statistics, maybe they did break it down of over the last 10 years, how much that number has increased by women. Mostly just because even in my own social network feed that like I'm a part of that I see personally, I feel like I see a lot of women now that are being ordained just in the past like 3 to 5 years. It's not that like it's a new thing for the church, but it does feel like there's a revival or something that's new that's happening with women. Did they have a statistic on how many women over the past 10 years?
I would agree with that perception, just not just from the U.S. or even from our region. Mm-hmm. I've seen a lot of different places. But no, they didn't have in the statistics based on gender.
Mm-hmm. Even in the Dominican Republic, we all went to the district assemblies here, and they ordained more women than they did men.
Yeah.
Well, that's exciting. Absolutely. And what else? What else grabs your attention?
I think one of the fun things that I noticed was that one of the six world regions, Africa and Eurasia, are like leading the way. They're growing faster than the other regions. And I think that's really exciting. Like, it just speaks to how global our denomination is and how much we depend not just on the United States, you know? So I think that's really fun.
Exact stats on that one, since I have it here. Africa,
Statman Scott. Yeah.
Africa grew 7% last year. And now almost 30% of the world's Nazarenes are African. I mean, think about that. That's pretty cool.
That's so cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean,
when we think about like going to reach the lost, a lot of people think, let's go to Africa, you know? God's right. Already there.
They're coming to us.
Right. That's so cool.
It is really cool. And Africa is now going elsewhere.
Yeah.
Which
that's the Lord.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really cool. And Eurasia, really Africa as well in certain places, but Eurasia also includes some what we would call countries that are creative access, mm-hmm. places where you can't just say, I'm a missionary or even I'm a Christian. Very openly. And those places are growing and sometimes not even included in these stats because of that reality. We can't just say we have, you know, 50,000 Christians in that country when doing so would put them at risk. Right. So very cool. Very cool.
Yeah. Well, and I think that we should all celebrate as a denomination, a global denomination, that those two regions very specifically are growing. Mm-hmm. In Asia, even as Asia Pac starts to become a piece of those statistics as well, because most of the unreached people groups are in those places. Mm-hmm. And so when you think of the 1040 window, when you think about major world religions of Islam and Buddhism and Hinduism, like that's what they're dealing with in those regions. And so if they're growing, if their statistics are growing over there, then that means that there is evangelism taking place. There's conversion taking place in some of these world religions that are rooted into the cultural fabric of these countries, you know? So I think it's really exciting to see the numbers of Africa, Eurasia, and I'm sure Asia Pac is starting to look at all of those numbers as well, that God's really doing some amazing stuff in areas that at one point in time we're like, oh, they're just unreached people groups. Like, we can start having a conversation of the unreached people groups are becoming reached.
Yeah.
And that's an exciting conversation to have in the church.
Yeah,
that's really good. What else?
I have one. Your observation said a greater number of new Nazarenes are being received by transfer from other denominations, while fewer new Nazarenes are being received by profession of faith compared to a decade ago. Yeah. I think it's good to receive people from other denominations, but I feel like our main growth should come from having new converts. And we need to do better in reaching people, and we need to evaluate what we are currently doing. And in order to know what can we do or what can we do different, we need to evaluate what we are doing now.
I think that speaks to our evangelism techniques and being willing to go outside of our comfort zones, because it's a lot easier to talk to somebody that already says, yeah, I have a relationship with Jesus, but maybe it's not in the same sect or the same mm-hmm. road that we are in. So it's a lot easier to have that conversation with them rather than somebody that blatantly defies God and does not want a relationship with God. That's a lot of a harder conversation. And so our statistics reflect that we're not doing the hard stuff. Mm-hmm.
Even as you couch it in terms of conversation, I wonder if we've lost, not everyone, there is growth. I mean,
right.
That's what we're saying. But if many of us have lost the ability to really speak the language of people that don't know Christ.
Mm-hmm.
That's concerning. Yeah. That should concern us.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else? Emily, did you have a specific one?
I did. the one that got my attention, and I think mostly because it's something that we are really trying to think through, even in our own church here in Santo Domingo, is the crux of it. I'm going to read the whole sentence. It says, although we have well over 420,000 members in Mesoamerica, slightly more than half that total weekly attend the largest worship service offered, 53.7%, as well as discipleship groups, 53.2%. And it made me start thinking about just even in the urban church conversation that we've been having of when our tradition is starting to maybe strangle a little bit of what we do. And so when I read this statistic, I thought, you know, it's interesting to me that we're still asking people to say, what are your numbers of your large worship time? And what are your numbers of your small group time? Where, why say it in the context of the church that we're with, because we have our Sunday morning, what would be in this statistic considered our large worship time, but we have more people meeting on Wednesday nights in our small group settings because we're in the community, mm-hmm. Because we're in people's homes. Mm-hmm. And so people, we have larger numbers that are in this way being discipled as opposed to coming and being a part of worship, like that large group setting. And so I just think of it in the way of, I hope that one day we can get to a conversation that it's not like, I almost feel like it's an either or of you either come and you're a part of the big worship as well as discipleship. And like, this is an all inclusive thing, or you're only a part of discipleship. And I just see a lot of people in our Wednesday evenings in our specific circumstance that cannot be a part of the Sunday morning huge worship experience. They're working or they are part of other things, that it's not that they're not choosing to be there. It's just they can't be there. Mm-hmm. So like, to me, I think the conversation, I would like to see the conversation start to open up a little bit more. Not that these are like bad statistics or good statistics, but to me it's interesting that we still continue to maintain a statistic of worship attendance and discipleship attendance. Like, mm-hmm. to me, worship is a part of my discipleship. Mm-hmm. When I ask people, what makes you a good disciple? A lot of them would say, I'm a part of my congregation. You know, it's interesting to me that we just have that separation of statistics still. And it makes me wonder if in 20 years, if we'll still use that same vocabulary, or if it'll force maybe a change in conversation a little bit.
I think that's interesting. I've not viewed it that way, because I think traditionally people would say, the same people that are attending the worship service are attending a Sunday school class. Mm. Like, it is different for our denomination in the past 10 years to identify, oh no, that Wednesday night group, if someone's not a part of Sunday school or even worship, they're still counted. They mm-hmm. used to not be counted.
Right.
And now they are. And so I think a lot of traditional churches would hear this and just be like, oh, that's the same people. And mm-hmm. the stat is almost the same, you know? So I think people would just kind of throw that, you know, into, oh no, the same people are the dedicated people. And there they are. In our case, it's not that.
Yeah. And I think that actually is becoming more common that it's not the case. Because mm-hmm. even some churches that we connected with in the States on our home assignment a while back said, if you join us on Wednesday night, it's a totally different crowd than what's on Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. And so, and it was usually like, I don't know, I say baby Christians, but like new believers mm-hmm. in the discipleship groups versus the Sunday morning. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The more traditional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel, I'm going to transition a little bit. I feel like there are a few of these observations that maybe we don't want to talk about, but we need to. They don't reflect well on us as a church. I think maybe you guys are knowing what I'm touching on, Freya.
Yeah, I'm going to read it. Membership in Nazarene Youth International has increased only 3% in 10 years. And the one-year total from 2018 is 0.53%. So I think this is concerning.
Less than 1%.
And yeah. At a personal level, I feel like I need to do better in reaching my generation. Because sometimes, like, well, I share with youth that that are involved in missions, and we like to reach the children, and we like to reach the adults. But I don't know if we're doing what we can, like with our generation. And to me, I was reading this and I was reflecting, what am I doing to reach my generation, mm-hmm. like people my age? Mm-hmm. And so I'm asking that question. Yeah. I made that question to myself, and I think I need to do better.
I think the frustrating thing for me is that we keep saying that, you know, the youth is the future of the church. The youth need to be a part of the church, and we need to do everything. Like, people keep saying that. I've heard that over and over in multiple congregations and multiple churches that we've been able to share with. But then we don't see that reflected. Like, we don't see that mentality. And I'm no exception either. Like, I haven't been doing, like you were saying, Freya, all that I can do to reach my generation or even the younger generation. Mm-hmm. And so, like, what can we do?
Mm-hmm. At the same time, like, I would encourage you, being an outsider and looking at your lives, I mean, you are discipling some youth, even here in Dominican Republic.
True.
And, you know, Freya, you are an example for many youth that are accepting a missions call. I like that you both are saying, what can I do? Because I think the first thing is, oh, you know why the reason is we're not reaching youth? It's because the older generation is doing something, or it's because, but the first examination needs to be inward, mm-hmm. needs to say, what can I do what can we do as a church or a local community to do this better? Mm-hmm. Are there other factors?
I am curious about this statistic because we've mentioned this a ton. We were youth pastors for 2 years, and I didn't know there was a statistic. I didn't know there was a membership to NYI. Mm-hmm. So, like, maybe there's an education piece to this.
Yeah.
We had 20 teenagers in our youth group, and I don't think any of them were in this statistic because we didn't separate them.
Yeah.
And all these statistics do come from this. We could call it the senior pastor's statistical report at the end of the year.
But we never had a membership class. Yeah. Most of our teens were not members.
Right.
No, but they can be NYI members.
Yeah. Even if you're not like a member of the Church of the Nazarene, you can be a member of the Nazarene.
This is what I mean. I think maybe a piece of it is education to the local churches.
Right.
Because I didn't know that membership in NYI was separate from membership to the Church of the Nazarene.
So what you're saying is that, like, this statistic could be poorly reflected because there could be other congregations that have a lot of youth, like, present in their church, but they're not reporting them because they're not official members.
Right. Like, we didn't have, like, an NYI club.
Right.
Or if the senior pastor doesn't talk with the youth pastor when he's filling out the report, you know, how many would truly be? Honestly, this should be through the roof, the numbers should be, because membership is not hard. I mean, if you average 40, you know, youth at your service or whatever, but you probably have 60 that are overall involved in some way. And you also include every Sunday school teacher, although they might be 60 years old. That's included in NYI membership as well. Like, this number should be so high. And that's even more concerning. However, I think you're right. From working in our region, people don't understand what it means. In some countries, you have to pay dues to be a member.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
Yeah, so
In other places, you have to be a member of the Church of the Nazarene, like received as a member, for them to include you on that staff. That's not according to our manual of the church, but of the denomination. But people operate that way. So, yeah. There's one on giving as well. And I think maybe, you know, that's important to touch on. World Evangelism Fund. And we'll talk about that in the future here. And I think very quickly in the next few episodes. But what is the reality? Some promising things and some other things we need to probably do better.
I think it's interesting that the WEF report says that global mission giving has gone up by 5.6%. But if you dig into that statistic, only a third of our denominations are giving the minimum 5.5%. And what's more interesting to me is that 96% of the entire budget came from one region, USA, Canada. And that's interesting to me because as a missionary, I feel like part of my job is to help whatever culture, whatever location I'm in, understand how the Church of the Nazarene functions. And if I'm doing that, one of my first things is to say, like, you participate in a global denomination. And a huge piece of that is being able to support missionaries in Asia, in Africa, in the USA, Canada, like preaching that to them. Like, you are a member of this and it's our responsibility to take this on. It's interesting to me that that has not sunk in. And it isn't, and it's based on percentage. It's not based on dollar amount even,
yeah,
or peso or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. It's based on percentage. So the fact that the percentage is not being hit does not make any sense to me.
That's a very good point. Even though you have different countries that are not able to give the same amount as the United States and Canada, of course, but they could give 5.5% of whatever is coming in their tithes, mm-hmm, and offerings. Right. It's concerning to see that that's not occurring.
How is that even possible? Like, maybe that's a question not for the podcast, but how does a district say you can continue being a church, a denominational church, but not pay your budgets? How does that happen?
Oh boy, that's a hot button topic.
Yes.
That's for another episode. Probably.
It's very, but it's very important. I mean,
we are missional. That is our DNA. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So.
One of our missionary friends here in the Dominican Republic is, you know, newly a Nazarene, you know, and one of the fascinating things that drew him to the Church of the Nazarene is our missions. And I told him about a church that was like, you know, I was going and I was talking to them about World Evangelism Fund because they had not been giving up until now. And he just stopped me and he said, wait, aren't they Nazarene? And I said, yes. I mean, this is a guy that's not even Nazarene, you know, but he himself was like, wait, I thought you, if you're a Nazarene, you just give to missions. And I said, that's how it should be, my friend. Yes. Awesome. I think that's instructive. I think that's, mm-hmm, really helpful. His mentality should be everyone's mentality. Yeah.
Right.
I think the part of the statistic that, to me, I think even this year could change. When you write this report, you're going to do this again next year. Mm-hmm. And what could, mm-hmm, immediately change is the one that says still nearly 29% of our churches did not give anything to World Evangelism Fund.
What?
And yeah. So, like, wow. Immediately, if every single church or, like, if every district just said, Easter offering is coming up and we are all going to receive the Easter offering. Like, we all receive it. We all receive it. District superintendents say we all receive it. All pastors say we all receive it. And it becomes this expectation of we are going to receive the Easter offering this year. Like, everybody talks about it. We breathe it. We just know it's going to happen. People receive the offering. They turn it in. I mean, this number, literally 29%, could go down to zero.
Yeah.
If every church just received one Easter offering this, yes, year, you know, mm-hmm, and that would be amazing if every church just said one offering. Yeah. We want more than that, right? But right. Like, this number could go to zero, yeah, in 1 year, like, if we all just did.
Like,
one.
This statistic isn't just like those who aren't giving the 5.5%.
Right?
This is like, yeah, zero. Uh-huh. All you have to do is give $1.
We
one
never
peso,
turned
one...
anything in all year.
Whatever.
We turned nothing, yeah, in towards
whatever.
that's what I mean. Like,
yeah,
at what point does the district step in and say, like, you're not Nazarene.
That's not,
that's not who we are.
That's so true. Yeah.
So this is the worthless servant's charge.
Yeah.
Receive an offering this year. Let's make this 29% go down to zero. Like, yeah, we can do it.
Easter,
please, please, please.
Easter offering's coming up.
Yeah.
And promote it. And yeah, I believe that's one of the most significant ways that we receive around the globe World Evangelism, yes, Fund.
If you have never heard of the Easter offering, like me, make sure to check in with your district superintendent or your local pastor, or somebody has the information.
Yeah.
Just start asking questions.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think this last one is so important that we'll dedicate an episode to it.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and do that. For now, you can find these 10 observations. Actually, there were 10 that were posted. And then I also had 9 that were posted just regarding our Mesoamerica region. And so the idea is not to inundate you too much, but the idea is rather to kind of glean from all this huge fire hose of information and allow you just to observe some of those things. So yeah, there's a lot more that's encouraging, a lot more that maybe kind of puts a thumb in our back and says, come on, guys, we can do better. But where can they find this, and where, you know, where can they contact us, Emily?
Yeah, we would love for you to know all of the thoughts and read the entire article on transformtheglobe.com. You can also find them linked to all of our social media accounts on Facebook. You can see it on the Worthless Servants podcast. You can find us online at www.mesoamericagenesis.org. That podcast tab, you can find this podcast, all of the other podcasts, but you can find a ton of articles as well related to a lot of these things. So we'd love to interact with you. We'd love to hear your comments on them. I know a lot of you guys get this audio on WhatsApp. Find us on Facebook. We want to hear what you have to think about these statistics. What are some ways that you would propose that maybe we would be able to see some changes? If you could make one change this year and you would see one statistic change, what is it that you would do? We'd love to hear what you have to say. Let's start the conversation and not just keep this conversation in a podcast form. Let's truly do something to change the world.
Yeah, that's awesome. We are the Worthless Servants, and I'm Scott Armstrong.
I'm AJ Fry.
I'm Emily Armstrong.
I'm Freya Galindo.
And I'm Chelsea Fry.
All right, we'll talk to you next time.
For more information, visit us on Facebook or at mesoamericagenesis.org.